This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. If you've been to the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, then you have seen the stick sculpture in the museum restaurant, which is the work of local artist Patrick Doherty, who brings the outdoors in with large stick sculptures made entirely of saplings and branches. Now a new documentary chronicles his worldwide works. It's called Bending Sticks. It'll premiere Sunday at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Today, Patrick joins us from Fresno, California, where he's working on his most current sculpture, and documentary filmmaker Penelope Mansell is also here in the studio. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you on the program.
Hey, thank you very much.
Nice to be here.
So, Patrick, according to this documentary, your sister and her friends your family would follow you into the woods as a young man because you apparently enjoyed playing with sticks all your life. Is that true?
Well, that was the impression that I have now. It's hard to remember your childhood perfectly. But we did have a special place. We lived in Southern Pines, North Carolina. I had a special little vale that was treed with dogwoods, and we spent a lot of time there playing.
Why sticks? I mean, you say it is hard to remember your childhood, but do you think you had a kind of special fascination with sticks back then?
Well, I think so. You know, and kids know everything about sticks. It's a weapon, a tool, a piece of a wall, and so seems like we all contain a bit of the shadow life of our hunting and gathering past, and kids get to play that out. And so I was, like all children, I found the most available material and started messing with it. And this was a format. You know, when I went back to school, this became a format for, a material to work with.
Right.
And of course, you always just do something, and then you make up the reasons later.
It usually makes
did have some play in what I decided to do later.
But you didn't start out with when you decided to become an artist. It wasn't in sticks initially. Tell us about that journey from your original ideas about art.
Well, I started out as a health administrator and just found myself standing at the door of various studios, looking in there, wishing I could make things. I ended up at the University of North Carolina in clay, and I tried to fire something that was really big, and it didn't work out that well. I realized that I love the plasticity of clay, and it turns out that sticks are just a different kind of greenware. You know, it can harden up and become the thing, and it's easy to mark as well. So, these sticks become lines with which to draw, and it kind of apes the ability to kind of mark on a wet clay. So this kind of initial foray into clay led me right on into the woods and back to sticks.
They're beautiful sculptures and lyrical and graceful, and I think a lot of our listeners may have seen them. North Carolina Museum of Art, the Nasher, RDU, for goodness sake, you can see some of these sculptures. They're big. It looks like they take a lot of time to make. Take us through the process of building one of these sculptures.
Well, I'm a three-week, a month guy, so it takes 21 days to build something. I try to squeeze it into that space. Usually I don't know what I'm doing until I arrive. In the case here in Fresno, I'm building something called the learning curve, which I saw a picture of the Great Wall of China on the airplane and decided that, I could use this little hill that is on my site to give the sense of the geography of the hill by having a wall that came up and over the hill, did some fall to roll on its top and back down. So you get an idea, a starting point. Most ideas are just half-baked, and it's how you work them out as you try to save yourself that, kind of quickens you to do a really good job and a beautiful job. But I lay the footprint of that piece out on whatever place I'm working. I drill a number of holes in this case, put some sticks down in those holes, some bigger sticks, draw the shape that I want by setting a scaffold and using it as kind of an exoskeleton. So you pull the shape that you want, and then you can go along and make a kind of crust on it out of sticks going lots of different directions. After you do the structural phase, you end up doing the aesthetics. And so once you get a canvas, you can draw on it. So, there's a way that you go back and put sticks where you think they look good. And finally, kind of the cosmetic phase of doing fix-up. And that's what I'm involved in today here in Fresno.
So, Penelope, tell us how you first found out about Patrick and what made you think this would be a great documentary.
Hi, Patrick.
Hey.
I saw my first Patrick piece at the Durham Arts Council, actually, and I absolutely loved it. There was so much energy. And shortly after that, went to Boston and out to a piece at the De Cordova Museum in Lincoln, Mass. And it was snowing, and Patrick had wrapped this turret, and the piece had come down, and there was a little sort of hut you could shelter from the snow in. And it really moved me, and I thought, I must go back and meet this guy and see if I can make a movie about him. And I called him up when I got back, and he invited me to look at his hand-built house, which is extraordinary. And we talked about making a film, but that was 20 years ago, and I had no idea how to raise money for a film and how to go about doing the development for it. And so now, 20 years later, 200 Patrick Doherty sculptures later, I knew Frank Conhouse and Kenny Dulshimer. We'd made another film together, and I went to them and said, would you do this with me? And both of them were enthusiastic. Frank had just commissioned Patrick to build a piece in his house.
It's here in Durham.
In Chapel Hill, yes. And Kenny was keen to work with us again, and so we approached Patrick, and he was game. Thank goodness.
And give us an idea of the scale, Patrick. It takes a lot of wood to make one of these sculptures.
Well, a tractor trailer loads of saplings.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, and as my appetite has gotten bigger, the work has gotten bigger as well. You know, so, you know, I partner with organizations, and they use their resources and goodwill in the community to help me organize. So,
goodwill, it includes volunteers often, right?
It includes a lot of volunteers and a lot of goodwill from the community. I've got an underlying thing. It's hard to hate a sculpture if your neighbors are working on it. So, I've built in a kind of fail-safe mechanism to have people start to like the work right off.
That's like inviting your neighbors to your party if you think it's going loud and late.
That is so right.
Very smart. Well, but also, many times these sculptures are outdoors. They're in public. And so it also carries the message, doesn't it, that this is art. And so for people seeing it in process, in progress, it in some ways demystifies art.
It really does. The drama of building is a really important part of it. You know, there's always the doubting when the sticks get dumped on the ground, and it's, you know, that same people that are calling the police that day may invite you over to dinner the last day you're there, you know, because the piece is taken on some dimension and some validity and some illusions, you know, that they can really, get with. But the drama is a very important part of the work. It shows how something is built, and it makes it approachable.
Now, what about working with volunteers? You know, the film shows the volunteers actually stitching these things together. How difficult is it for you to watch amateurs place your sticks?
Well, we all share the misery, is all I can say. The daily grind of putting sticks in is, you know, it's not as great as the day you think of it or the day that you finish. And so, you know, we kind of make a loose-knit fighting force that, you know, give up our regular lives for a few minutes and, you know, kind of join together to make something beautiful. And, that's probably the biggest, you know, part of it for me is getting to know the folks that are helping me work, and then also it blends with the public that just walks up and talks to you the entire time. So, you know, this kind of dialogue between you and the public and the people that are working for you is very informative and helps drive the work, but, you know, it also helps true the work up and makes your ideas more, you know, reach out for the public
right.
more.
So, Penelope, tell us about some of the locations in this film. Where did you have to go to put this film together?
Well, we followed Patrick through five different pieces, and the first at the North Carolina Museum of Art, and then the second one was in Rock Hill, South Carolina. We went there three times. We went to each place. Well, we went to the others three times, and then Frank's home in Chapel Hill, Castle House, and then up to the mountains in Highlands, where he built a huge piece, and then after that to Dumbarton Oaks in Washington, D.C. We went to each place three times at least, beginning, middle, and end, unless it was really local. And it was fabulous to watch the see what had happened in the meantime from the times we left. And we put a time-lapse camera up in each of the places to cover, you know, when we couldn't be there.
So, Patrick, let me ask you about the wood itself. It's all from the area, from the place where you're going to actually make the sculpture. Is that right?
That's right. We try to gather locally and figure out, you know, what's available, what will bend, and then try to make the best of it.
So what bends best are saplings. Those are alive. You have to cut them down. I'm wondering about the environmental impact of your work.
Well, it's more like trimming your hedges, you know, than it is taking a bulldozer and rooting things out. I try hard to find places where materials are already coming down, like, you know, there might be a shopping center in the works, and the trees have been cut, and what's come back up is a lot of saplings, and, you know, they're about to bulldoze them down. And many times I've thrown myself in front of the blade and said, no, let us cut them. We'll do it. Back up for a minute, you know. So we're always looking for good sites. You know, they're the most innocuous one. It might be behind the sewage treatment plant or behind the football stadium or some ditch somewhere. So, you know, it really doesn't have a huge environmental impact. And if we were to cut in a certain place, then usually those saplings come right back up.
So over the years now that you've been working with wood, sticks, saplings, have you developed a technique? Has your technique changed much from the time you started?
Well, you know, I think you develop conventions that you can use. Like I often now have pieces that people can walk into, even though they might vary widely in their shape, you know, that ability to go inside. And so, you know, working on how to make a beautiful door or one that seems like a source of all the energy for the piece, you know, those are things that I've discovered and played off of. But, you know, each time, even if you make a little maquette or a drawing, the minute you start, you just throw that over your shoulder, because the piece has to have a life of its own, and you have to discover things about that particular material and really those people who are helping you. And it's a bit like crafting a floating compromise. You know, there's lots of things that you're constantly reacting to and trying to true it up to your initial feelings of what would be a fantastic piece in the space and what could capture people's imagination.
How widely do the finished products vary from your sketches? Have you had any sort of big surprises, radical differences from your initial sketches?
They're not radical, because usually my sketches are so minimal that it looks like, you know, if there's a coffee stain on it, I say, oh, I must have meant that. So there's a constant reading into the pieces, but I know how they're supposed to feel at the end. You know, I walk around and know what the primary views of the place of the sculpture should be. And so, like, I craft towards a kind of a dream image that I have in my mind, you know, like, oh, that should feel this way. It should feel this way. And I'm constantly urging everybody in a certain direction.
Any big surprises, again, finished products that struck you as almost preposterous or unbelievable, given what you thought at the beginning?
Well, I think that, you know, not really per se, but, you know, there are the beauty of taking all your scaffolding down and removing the fence if you had to have one up and seeing it live in its site. You know, it's always a thrill the last day to see how the piece really sits its site and how it beckons the public over and tries to enthrall them, you know. So each time I get that thrill at the last moment.
What about the weather? Does it have much impact on the longevity of your projects, rain, snow, that sort of thing?
Well, it's, you know, that's me out there in a rain suit and some rubber gloves working 8 hours a day, particularly in places like Ireland or, you know, Seattle. You're going to work in the rain if you're doing an outdoor piece.
Now, how about the pieces themselves? They have survived pretty well?
Yeah, they do. It's a much tougher situation a much tougher look piece, even though we make them look light and like they're just floating along. They're very, very tough because you're, you know, putting lots of sticks at diagonals with each other, and you're adding layers, and so it makes a very strong piece of work.
Yeah, in the documentary, they talked about something I hadn't considered, but if it's going to be an indoor piece, you got to bug bomb the wood first. Right. And then there's this, you have this great story about something you learned about bug bombing and certain insects that are seemingly immune.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there are certain, I think it was praying mantis, and they have a praying mantis case is almost, you know, I don't know how you would destroy it. So I built a piece in the museum some years ago at the North Carolina Museum, and all of a sudden these praying mantises come out and spread themselves by the millions across the rest of the work. Of course, they died instantly, but that was not before the staff had seen these advance of the insect
eating
world.
Insects.
On the,
yeah.
Well, you just like your coffee stain. You meant that too.
Well, it added the necessary drama. Let's say that.
So, Penelope, you were attracted to this work. You were mesmerized by it. You wanted to do the film. What did you learn in doing the film that you hadn't known going in?
Oh, lots of things. I hadn't realized Patrick made so many pieces in a year. I didn't quite understand how long they lasted and how he lets. I always wondered how Patrick would build a piece and then just let it go and let it disintegrate. And I really feel like he moved on. He just moves on from the last piece and doesn't care. You know?
Do you care, Patrick? How do you feel?
Well, the thing is, I enjoy the process of building, and I think that's where my, you know, strong point is. And once something is built, you know, I usually have willing receivers. And
like
so the public is really ready for it. Oftentimes we take down the fence and there's just a flood of enthusiasm from people. People will even stop their cars and get out and come running over to look at it. And so, you know, with such a willing recipients, it's easy to, you know, walk away and start something else.
Thank you both for being on the program today. Patrick Dougherty, Penelope Mansell, thank you so much.
Hey, thank
Pleasure,
you.
Thank you.
The documentary Bending Sticks will premiere Sunday at the Carolina Theater in Durham. For more information, visit stickwork.net. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Our show can be found at stateofthings.org, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.